You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. Since 1988, Whitetail Institute has been perfecting annual and perennial seed products specifically for hunters who plant food plots. Their seeds have been engineered to be palatable, high in protein, and extremely attractive to deer. Whether you live in the Deep South or Midwest farm country, they have products that will help you grow your best food plot yet. For more information about their seeds and their blends, visit whitetailinstitute.com. Enter the discount code SE15 for 15% off.
Chronic migraine, 15 or more headache days a month, each lasting 4 hours or more, can make me feel like a spectator in my own life.
Botox, onabotulinum toxin A, prevents headaches in adults with chronic migraine. It's not for those with 14 or fewer headache days a month. It's the number one prescribed branded chronic migraine preventive treatment.
Prescription Botox is injected by your doctor. Effects of Botox may spread hours to weeks after injection, causing serious symptoms. Alert your doctor right away as difficulty swallowing, speaking, breathing, eye problems, or muscle weakness can be signs of a life-threatening condition. Patients with these conditions before injection are at highest risk. Side effects may include allergic reactions, neck and injection site pain, fatigue, and headache. Allergic reactions can include rash, welts, asthma symptoms, and dizziness. Don't receive Botox if there's a skin infection. Tell your doctor your medical history, muscle or nerve conditions, including ALS, Lou Gehrig's disease, myasthenia gravis, or Lambert-Eaton syndrome, and medications, including botulinum toxins, as these may increase the risk of serious side effects.
Why wait? Ask your doctor, visit BotoxChronicMigraine.com, or call 1-800-44-BOTOX to learn more.
All right, everybody, this is the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and today we have a special guest with us, Mr. Adam Hayes. Adam, how are we doing today, man?
I'm doing great, Dan. Appreciate the invitation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's awesome. Like, I really like talking with the quote unquote average Joes who, you know, they're working the 40 hour gigs, you know, 40, 50 hour gigs. They're on a factory line. They're in a cubicle, whatever the case is. But today's conversation, I wanted hours in the tree stand, to have a conversation with someone who has spent a lot of time in a tree stand, being able to observe like, big mature whitetails during this November rut time frame, and have a conversation, and your name popped up into my head, and I was like, dude, let's see if he can get on the phone. And sure enough, you're gracious to be here today, so I really appreciate that.
Absolutely. Like I said, I appreciate the invitation, and hopefully I can come up with something that'll help somebody out there.
Absolutely.
The next few weeks this is what we all wait for.
That's a fact. Hey, I don't want to jump right into it right now. I got to ask you a couple questions.
Sure.
Over the course of your life, what kind of jobs have you worked?
Yeah, it was mainly construction out of high school, framing, drywall. Went to work for Columbia Gas, and I ran heavy equipment for like 12 years, working on, you know, natural gas pipelines and that got a little crazy. I mean, we were always working on, you know, blowing natural gas was just not the safest thing in the world. And life's too short to be, you know, nervous every day about something like that. So I actually left that career, you know, which it was a great job, and got into the archery industry. Man, it's got to be pushing 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Been doing it for a while, but yeah, mainly construction and running equipment. I mean, running heavy equipment is probably my second love, man. I really enjoyed that.
Running bulldozers and excavators and things like
backhoes.
Yeah.
You do plastic natural gas pipelines long enough and you develop a touch. Tell me.
Yeah.
I'll tell you.
It's pretty sweet. How a really experienced guy. So I, for a while, worked for, back in the day when I had no kids and no responsibilities, I got laid off from a job. They basically shut down a whole side of, a business and laid off a whole bunch of people. And I went to go work for a buddy who was a landscaper. And basically I just worked for him
and avoided any other real world job because I wanted to hunt as much as possible. And so he's just like, if there was a cold front, all I would do is call him and be like, dude, cold front. And he'd be like, okay, like no big deal. Right. I get somebody else to come help me for the day. Anyway, there was, we had to work with some guys who would grade land, and the ability that you said, a touch, that a guy can make a, this giant machine do something so intricate and make water flow a specific way down the side of a hill just kind of really impressed me.
Yeah. Yeah. It's amazing what you can do spending time on equipment and the difference between a beginner and somebody that's done it for a long time, just make it look so easy.
Right. Absolutely. Let me ask you this question. What was one of the first jobs you ever had as a kid when you were your first job ever?
Working for a tree trimming business.
Okay.
Yeah.
Running. So you were running a chainsaw, or were you just the guy picking up the branches?
I was the guy picking up the sticks and throwing them in the chipper.
There you go. Yeah. There you go, man. I've had some crazy, like my first job was a paper route, and that was awesome until it started raining and snowing. And then I still had to do it no matter what the temperature or the weather conditions were. And that one sucked. And then the other one, the job I actually hated the most was being a dishwasher at a restaurant.
Oh, yeah.
That was disgusting.
A little bit of that. Yeah. Not for long.
No, not for long. All right. Before we get into the topic of today, I do got to send a huge shout out to all the partners of the Nine Finger Chronicles. I'll keep this short so we can get to the main topic today. But if you're looking for one of the best broadheads on the market, I'm a huge fan of Wasp Archery. They have a huge lineup of mechanical and fixed blade options. I'm a huge fan of the three blade jackhammer. I've been using that head for just under 20 years now. And most of their heads are still manufactured in the United States. Go to wasparchery.com, discount code NFC20. If you want one of the primo optics brands, Vortex Optics is the way to go. They have the VIP warranty. So if you buy one of their optics, whether that's a rifle scope or red dot, a spotting scope, and you run over it with your truck, you can put all the pieces in a box. They will fix it or replace it for free. That's their VIP warranty, vortexoptics.com. Right now, I have a ton of trail cameras sitting over a lot of mock scrapes, and my mock scrapes right now are actually blowing up with the amount of sign that I'm seeing on them. And that's giving me a really good inventory of what is on the properties that I'm hunting. So that Rope-A-Dope mock scrape kit from Code Blue Sense is something that I've been dabbling with the last 3 years. And now I'm not going to say I've mastered it, but I've put them in positions to where not only I think they're going to draw deer in for the kill shot, but get the inventory that I need to know what deer are on the properties. Go to codebluesense.com, discount code NFC20 for 20% off. Next is the Reveal trail camera. Very, very easy to use. You make sure there's batteries in the camera. You scan the QR code and you have a fully functioning cell cam in the matter of minutes. There's no more hassle of entering numbers and codes. So go to tacticam.com/cameras and check out the brand new Ultra by Reveal. All right. Adam, I want to talk about big bucks today, especially in this early November timeframe. And I'm going to ask you just a high level question real quick. And that is, talk to me about, you've spent a ton of time in the tree stand over the last, however many years, right? 20, 30 years.
45 this year.
45. That's 45, amazing.
45th season bow hunting.
This will be my 31st bow hunting season. And so I want to talk to you about trends that you see or behaviors that you have witnessed from some big bucks over the course of that 30 or that 45 years.
Sure. I am, to be honest, you know, I've always, you know, for the last 30 years been a guy that focuses on hunting a specific animal. Mm-hmm. you know, not so much a deer hunter, but hunting specific deer. So, you know, my favorite times were always early season and late season when deer are on a strict feeding pattern, you know, when they're the most predictable, the most patternable, you know, your best chance of killing them. And I really struggled with November, you know, for quite a while because, you know, I did all this work to find a big deer and locate him and figure out what he's doing. And then once November hit, you know, all that just goes out the window pretty much. So, like I said, I really struggled with it for a while, but my basic tactics for early and late season were always, you know, for the last 30 years, kind of based on lunar influences for the most part, following the moon. And really when I quit following your basic, you know, stages of the rut and trying to figure out what they're doing and when they're doing it, and just really got hyper-focused on daylight activity and those peak activity times through the day, that's when I really started having a lot of success in November, because I'm normally, I do most of my traveling in November out of state, and, you know, trying to plan that stuff, you know, it's a strategic nightmare in November. But really just focusing on peak activity times and, you know, a big mature deer in November is just, you know, all over the place, but there's certain aspects of November that you can focus on that are really going to increase your chances. And if I was really going to say the one thing and the one pattern that has really helped me the most when it comes to November hunting a big deer, it's your mornings when you have your overhead or underfoot moon peaking right after daylight. It's like these big deer that are cruising and looking for does, they just don't want to give up. You know, once they start traveling, they're really focusing on finding that doe in the mornings. They just don't want to give up the search. And I think I killed 3 Boone and Crockett deer 3 years in a row in Kansas on those morning hunts where, you know, if it's daylight at 7 o'clock and you get a moon that peaks anywhere from 8 o'clock till say 11, those have just been the best mornings bar none. I think almost every buck I've killed in November has been on a morning hunt like that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so I'm glad you brought all this up because I know you're a moon phase guy, right?
It's moon position.
Moon position guy. I'm going to be that guy who says, I don't think the moon has anything to do with that. Okay. Sure. That's based off of my experience. You know, I've talked with guys who they're dead set. They agree with you. They're like, dude, the moon position has a lot to do with it. I've talked to wildlife biologists who have done studies and have basically said that our studies show that moon position doesn't really affect deer movement at all. And so I want to hear maybe like from an experience wise, why you believe that moon position plays such a huge role in big deer movement throughout the course of any time frame.
Main reason is because I've paid attention to it for over 30 years now, and I've witnessed it firsthand. And I talk to, you know, hundreds, if not thousands of guys every year that follow it as well and are seeing the same things. Now, I'm going to be the first guy to admit that there are days every month throughout the season where the weather is going to trump everything. Mm-hmm. You know, you get that first cold front right before a storm comes in or right after it blows out or a beautiful high pressure day. There are just days that you know that deer are going to be moving because of the weather. Mm-hmm. And it's going to trump everything. Doesn't matter what the moon's doing. But there are going to be a handful of days every month where that moon is going to trump everything, especially early and late when deer are on a strict feeding pattern. You know, I killed my biggest buck ever in Kansas early November. You know, deer were not rutting yet at all. typical Kansas weather, 1st of November, get there and it's 85 degrees out, you know, and I'd, you know, been watching this buck on camera. He was getting closer and closer to moving in daylight. And I planned my hunt around the Red Moon, got there for 4 or 5 days, you know, seeing one or two deer a day because it was so hot. And I ended up shooting that buck on the first night of the Red Moon when it was peaking, you know, right at prime time. And he's out almost 2 hours before dark, 80, 85 degree weather. No reason for that deer to be out moving at all, you know. But it was a good win for my set, and it was a Red Moon evening. And, you know, there was no weather pattern or activity that should have been increasing, you know, deer activity for that evening. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I've seen it both ways. You know, I've killed, you know, a lot of my big deer on days when the weather was great and the moon wasn't. Mm-hmm. You know, like I said, it just, for me, it's all about the wind. You know,
yeah.
When I quit hunting winds that were good for me and started hunting winds good for the buck that I was after, that's when things really changed, because, you know, a 4, 5, 6 year old buck has learned the game. He knows, you know, he's going to live and die by his nose and trust it above everything else. And when you actually give him the wind to his advantage, so he feels comfortable enough to move before dark, that's number one for me.
Yeah.
Number two is going to be, I want that wind with a good weather pattern that's going to increase activity, or I want it to line up with a good Red Moon evening where the moon and the position and the gravitational pull is going to increase activity. One or the two. When you get a night where you've got all three, you got your perfect wind on a Red Moon night and you got a weather pattern that's going to increase activity, that's the perfect storm for killing a big buck, and that's when things get bloody.
Gotcha. Okay. And then
besides those, just one other thing, besides those are the only times when I'm going to go into a kill spot to try to kill a big deer. The only time that those won't come into account is when I witness either, you know, seeing a deer myself or on trail camera making a mistake in daylight. If you got a buck making a mistake in daylight, it doesn't matter what the weather, the moon, anything's doing. You got to get aggressive and go in and kill them.
Yeah. Yeah. So just to reiterate what you said, the best moon time is when the moon is directly above us and the sun is coming up or going down, above us or below us.
Overhead or underfoot. That's when it's straight up or straight down. That's when it's got the most gravitational pull. It's the same thing that triggers your tides to come in. You know, the key to it is lining those up on the days where it's hitting right at prime time, right at daylight, right at dusk.
Gotcha.
It's just a natural instinctive push to get them up moving. You know, and I've heard all the stories about all the studies. It doesn't, you know, doesn't increase activity. You know, I got my own study hanging on my wall that, you know, that I've done myself for the last 30 years. What I will say is most of those studies, and I think I've read just about all of them, they're not focusing on the 2% of the deer herd that everybody wants to kill. They're looking at either the whole herd or they're looking at all the bucks. You know, we're talking about a 5 or 6 year old buck that everybody will agree is different than the rest of the herd. He doesn't act like the rest of the deer. And I would like to see a study that focuses just on that 2% that everybody wants to kill and at the specific time of the year that we're trying to kill them, you know? Because we're not talking about some huge migrational movement pattern, you know, that's going to show up on this great big arch on this study. We're talking about a giant buck that's going to get up just a couple minutes early than normal, and he might even only be moving 100, 150 yards from where he's bedding to feeding. So it's a very minute window of change that I'm focusing on, you know, when it comes to that. So you can believe all the studies that you want. Like I said, I've done my own study for 30 years, and I tell guys a lot of times if they doubt it, if you want to catch your first 50-inch muskie, are you going to go by a study that was done, or are you going to go talk to a guy that's got a wall full of 50-inch muskies and get your tips from him? I mean, it is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. I can get behind that. Mature bucks are definitely a different creature. Right. And they've experienced hunting seasons. They've experienced. And here's the thing about a mature buck that blows my mind is the patience that they have. the amount of patience they can sit and wait something out, right? And they know when to go and they know when to stay, and they can be invisible. Yeah. That's something that I've witnessed over these years that just completely blows my mind.
And that's why it's so crucial, you know, those little minute details and that buck just getting up a couple minutes earlier on a very specific night to move, because we all know that the best time to kill a big deer is normally the first time you go in. And I talk to guys every year about it, and they're like, man, it's hunting season. I need to be hunting. You know, I've only got this certain window to hunt. And that's, you know, that's great. So if you've only got this certain window to do it and to get it done, why don't you stack the deck in your favor and make sure you've got everything on your side for that one chance? Because every time you go in and you don't get it done, the game just keeps getting tougher and tougher. You know, he's going to pick up on something, whether it's your scent, hear you, catch you sneaking out after dark. I mean, you got to go in and get it done the first time that you go in, because it's just going to get tougher and tougher. So I'm all about trying to stack the deck in my favor and make sure I've got every factor on my side that's going to increase the chances of that deer moving when I go in.
Right, right. Makes sense. Okay. I want to talk about, there are times, let's say whether it's nocturnal movement or time of year or conditions, whatever the case is, that makes a buck not killable, right? Talk to me about your experience when a buck goes from not killable to killable and what that looks like.
I hunted a deer the last 2 years that was virtually unkillable. It was the most nocturnal buck I've ever hunted, and just, you know, beat my head against a tree trying to get on this deer and get him killed. Somebody ended up killing him in the rut. It was a 200-inch deer. But I'm not so sure that if it wasn't for breeding season, that deer would have ever been killed, because they just, you know, there's certain bucks that have just got it figured out, and whether it's, you know, something instinctual or they have had, you know, encounters with hunters that just, you know, they just do not move, you know? And like you said, they spend more time watching and listening and paying attention to their surroundings, and they just don't make mistakes. And, yeah, like I said, I don't know if that buck would have ever been killed, because I knew about that deer for 6 years. And I think in those 6 years, I had one daylight trail camera picture of that buck, and it just wouldn't move in daylight.
Yeah. Is there an age class that you have witnessed, that you have seen a shift in behavior, right? So we all know, like, that three-year-old is like a horny college kid who comes into rattling, and he's all over the farms and shit like that. And then we start to see these four-year-olds, they get a little bit more weary and patient, but still kind of killable. Is there an age where the behavior is just like, you gotta be on point to kill this age class and above?
Yeah, I'd have to say it's gotta be around that 5 or 6 year mark. You know, it's funny, every November here on my home farm, once November hits, all the big mature bucks are just gone. You know, they vanish. And then towards the end of the month, you know, whoever survives comes straggling back. And, you know, between watching deer here at home and then the last 40, 45 years, I've definitely seen where, you know, those older bucks, when they get to be 5 or 6, it's almost like their core areas just begin to just shrink and shrink and shrink until they just don't move that much at all. You know, they could live their entire life in, you know, 20 or 30 acres, maybe.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, when they get to be that age, it's just like an old guy, you know, really. My main goal anymore is just to keep my butt safe, you know,
on your couch or in your living room or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm concerned about my safety these days more than anything. So, I mean, that's my number one focus, and that's what it gets to be for them. You know, they quit participating in the rut as much. They're not out traveling as far as they used to be. And I mean, they've got their safe zone, and that's where they stay. And it just seems like every year keeps getting smaller and smaller, which makes it even tougher, you know, to catch them, because it's kind of like the October lull, you know. Mm-hmm. They're still doing the same thing pretty much every day, but to be able to get inside that area without tipping them off is next to impossible, because they're doing it in such a tight spot.
Yeah. Yeah, I ran into that scenario earlier the past week, where I went into a spot basically just to hang a trail camera. And while I was in there, I said, well, I might as well hunt, because I've done the damage by walking into downwind of this bedding. And so, well, it wasn't downwind, it was kind of quartering. And I got in the stand, and one of my target bucks pops up at 72 yards, and eventually he walks away from me and then comes back through after shooting light. But I got into his circle, and he didn't know about me, but because of schedule and because of I wasn't able to go after him that next day. So I had to wait a day to go, like 48 hours until the next time I could go hunt him. And then, of course, he didn't show up. He had moved bedding, or he had a different location by then. But it's amazing. It's just amazing how they just slip through the cracks, even when you know where they're at.
Yeah. Yeah. Even when you know where they're at and you still can't get a picture of them,
mm-hmm.
get an eyeball on them. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly why I do this and why I love it so much, because they're just so smart and so tough to kill when they get to be that age.
Yeah.
It's cool. Yeah. They're incredible animals.
So you talked a little bit about participating in the rut, and here's something that I have witnessed, and I want you to tell me what your experience is with this. Is the big bucks don't need to travel too terribly far, because the first doe within their core area, and I mean not core area, but like the core area, like their bedding areas,
yeah,
they're getting those does automatically just because of straight dominance. But then once they breed that first doe, and they've come out of that first doe, whether that's mid October or late October or even early November, what have you seen that big mature buck do after his first doe?
Oh, he's looking for the next one.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I don't think it's like, you know, you have the first wave come in. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, there's going to be multiple does that are going to be spread out, and two or three or four biggest, oldest mature does in an area, you know, he's probably getting to get to breed most of them, if not all of them. And he's just going to move on to the next one, because I've seen it here in Ohio, you know, like you said, late October, I've witnessed, you know, breeding those biggest, oldest does that come in super early. He's the first one on them, and then he's just going to move on to the next one. But they're just not going to, I don't think they're going to travel that much. You know, they're going to know where those three or four are in their immediate area, and that's where they're going to be.
Yeah. And so they stick, I have always felt like they stick really tight. When have you noticed them start to expand their range after that, the first week in November, after their first couple does?
When you get around that, you know, Thanksgiving week, you know, when you know the majority of those does that are going to come in November have been bred, and those big ones just don't want to give up, you know, and they're still searching for that, you know, last one that possibly is out there. It seems like that trolling phase, you know, in that third or fourth week of Thanksgiving that's when a lot of really big deer get killed. And I think early November and then late November, you know, is your best chance when you're trying to kill a specific big mm-hmm. buck. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you ever had a scenario play out, maybe on one of the farms that you've had, that you have access to, where maybe there was a target buck who he was maybe there in the summer, but then disappeared. And then around that Thanksgiving time came back, and maybe you had history with him where you had to, he was there for a week and then he disappears again. Have you ever had to do like a crunch time decision making? There's a giant on a farm for a limited period of time every single year, and you found that pattern and then moved in on him and got him?
Not really, not that comes to mind.
And the reason I say that is because I, for a period of time there, this year's an oddity because I just didn't get enough trail cameras up. But the past 10 years, I've been really trail camera heavy. And I have noticed that in that Thanksgiving timeframe, bonus bucks will show up, and usually they're big bodied bastards. I mean, they're just huge bucks that I have no clue about. They're on the property for 3-4 days searching my property, and then they're gone.
Yep.
Now, what would you do in a scenario like that to capitalize on a buck like that?
You know, it's really mainly all about time in the stand, mm-hmm. in the right spot at that time of the year. You know, your typical rut funnels, you know, your best funnels in on a farm, you know, that's really the time when you've got to be camped out in those best spots, you know, for as long as you can be there, because that's when you're going to catch one of those big deer that may not necessarily live there. Mm-hmm. When he comes through, he knows the best way to get through there. He knows where those pinch points and the funnels are and how it gets from point A to point B to check those does. And, you know, they're typically going to be, you know, going from one doe group to the next, you know, cruising downwind of those bedding areas. And, you know, those perfect rut funnels, those are the spots you need to be at that time of the year, because it's funny. I hear so many guys every year talking about what you're saying, where that deer only shows up, you know, this time every year, but how close it is to almost like the exact day every year.
Yep.
And when they do come through there, it's just a matter of being in the right place at the right time. You know, I think early season October, it's more about prioritizing those peak activity times. And then when you get into the rut, it's more about putting more emphasis on, you know, being in the right location and just, you know, putting your time in there and waiting for them to come through.
Yeah.
Which is, you know, it's kind of exact opposite of what I do the rest of the year. You know, I'm looking to really focus in on it, really on the perfect spot at the perfect time. And then in November, when you're trying to catch a giant one cruising, it's more about being in a, you know, one of the best spots you can be and just waiting him out.
Right.
And it's, you know, you get so many guys that'll sit 2 or 3 days and they're like, I need to move. Mm-hmm. You know, this ain't the spot. You do all that work to find the best spot. Just believe in your homework and believe in your scouting and know you're in the best spot and just be patient. I mean, patience kills more big deer than anything.
See, that's something I struggle with. Like personally, if I was going to look at myself and evaluate myself as a hunter, you know, I used to be that guy who would go in a morning do a run and gun, set up an afternoon, hunt it the same stand the next morning, no deer come through, I'm gone, right? Even though it was the best pinch or the best travel corridor on the entire farm, and I wouldn't give it enough time. And I often think, like, I move around too much sometimes. How do you know when to make that decision whether or not to move?
I make that decision before I even go in there, because like I said, I do everything I can to find these spots where I know I've got to have my best chance of killing a big deer. And you just have to make the decision and believe in what you've done and know that you're in the best spot. And it might take a day, it might take 10 days. But after 45 years, man, the patience and getting over the mind deal that it is, you know, of wanting to move and thinking that you need to be somewhere else. It's really all about finding that.
This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices. Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American.
That spot and just digging in, digging your heels and waiting for him to show up. And I mean, I've seen it in deer hunting. I've seen it in bear hunting. I do a lot of bear hunting. I'm ate up with it. And when you find a 15-year-old boar that, you know, nobody's ever seen before except on trail camera, and he shows up, you know, this week every year. It happened to me this past year. I've been hunting this bear in Alberta for the last, I think this was the fifth year I hunted him, and first time anybody's ever laid eyes on this bear came through. I didn't kill him, didn't get a chance to, but I mean, they're going to eventually show up, whether it's a buck, a bear, whatever. You get yourself in the right spot in November during the breeding season, you just got to wait it out. I mean, you just have to, you know.
I like that approach, but the obvious question now after saying that is, do you feel a stand, even like, let's say given the wind direction is in your favor and all that stuff, do you feel with the right access route, a stand can get burnt out?
Not in November.
Okay.
Not in November. No, because you're not talking about an animal that's living right there, you know? You're talking about an animal that's just going to come cruising through. And when he comes through, where's your best chance of catching him?
Yeah.
And it's going to be that one special spot.
Right. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense. Okay. With that said, then, calling, right? I don't care if it's this, you know, we just got done with this late October timeframe. We're getting in, like, the pre-rut is winding down and we're getting ready. Like, for me, the pre-rut on the farms that I hunt probably goes into November 3rd or 4th, and then it starts to get into rut activity. Calling. How do you, like, does calling work on a 6-7-year-old buck?
I don't do a whole lot of calling.
Yeah.
Do not, just because I've been burned on it so many times. I mean, I like to call slightly, lightly, early, you know, if I know I'm within earshot of a buck in his bed, because I think you got a better chance of getting him to come your way if he's laying there listening, as opposed to he's already up moving in a different direction. Mm-hmm. So, you know, early season, late October, I love to do some light rattling, you know, when I'm on a buck's travel pattern, just to get him up just a little bit earlier and head my way. In November, I can't remember the last big deer I really called in, but I'll tell you, I've had 10 times the success with a snort wheeze call as I have anything else.
Yeah.
In the last decade.
Yeah. I always used to be that guy from a progression standpoint. I would try to grunt, then I would try to rattle. And I always felt like unless that buck was the dominant buck, if I snort wheezed at him, it was like a 50-50 call. They're going to run away or they're going to come check it out, right? But I'll tell you this, a snort wheeze in the right conditions with the right observed body language has turned more deer towards me than any rattling sequence ever has.
Yeah, especially if you can see them.
Exactly.
See them, see how they react, see what their body language is. If you can get an eyeball on them, I think you're 10 times more likely to be able to call that deer in.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you ever blind rattle at all anymore?
If I'm in a spot where I know they either can't get downwind of me or I'm set up in a spot where the terrain kind of forces them into bow range if they try to get downwind of me. Yep. But that's about the only time I'll blind call.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, fair enough. What are some other behaviors that a big buck will do? And maybe let's talk a little bit about the quote unquote lockdown phase where they're with a doe. Are you setting that out or are you going in after them still?
That's probably the toughest part of the season. Mm-hmm. Toughest part to hunt. But I mean, yeah, if you know where he's at and you know he's locked down, heck yeah, going right in after him. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Because you got to get it. You have to basically land on him to kill him.
Yeah.
You know, because he's not going to go anywhere unless that doe does.
Yeah. And so at that point, you know, I know doe behavior changes a little bit when they're being chased. Being chased by a buck, but does a doe group or a specific doe groups, knowing a specific doe group's bed to food pattern play a role in where you set up at all?
During the lockdown?
Or any phase.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like when it comes to the lockdown, they end up in the weirdest places just because they're trying to get away from everybody, you know? Yeah.
Knowing, because everybody is always hyper-focused on trying to find a specific buck's bed-to-food pattern. Yeah. Does the doe group or like hunting on a farm, knowing your doe group's bed-to-food pattern important to you at all?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, obviously, you've got to know where those deer are, you know, because your stands are only as good as your ability to be able to get in and out, and nothing's going to ruin a hunt quicker than a mature doe, you know, blowing her head off. So, you know, you got to be able to avoid those areas and avoid, you know, you got to be able to avoid the big does, the mature does. You have to, because they'll ruin your hunt.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Are you identifying these tree stand locations before the season even starts, or how often now on the farms that you hunt are you tearing down a stand and moving it 20 yards or putting in a brand new set just for a specific buck?
I like to have my stands set well in advance. If at all possible, you know, and I know there's spots every year that I want to hunt and those stands, you know, go in the exact same tree every year. But I mean, you got to be able to adapt and read the room, you know, and see what's going on and be able to be a little mobile because sometimes you just got to be, you know, you got to be aggressive. And no matter how much you think you know what's going to happen, you know, seems like every year they throw a curveball and you got to be able to change on the fly. I shot one of my biggest bucks ever on a hanging hunt. Saw this buck come out in a back corner of a cornfield that just got picked and he was nudging some does around and he'd come out of a bedding area that I wasn't really familiar with and, you know, put a stand and sticks on my back and went in there the next night and watched that deer get up at 80 yards and came right by me and shot him. And it's just, you know, I would have never killed that deer in any of the stands that I had pre-hung for him.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time to get aggressive and a time to do that sort of thing, but you're going to have your spots every year that are tried and true that you're going to, you know, put some time in as well.
Absolutely. All right. So my next logical question after this is, the winds change every single day, right? For the most part, right? They're, whether it's north, northwest, or, you know, and then you have a front come through and east and south, whatever. How do you cycle through tree stands for the same deer based off of different wind directions? Like, how do you make those decisions?
That's a good one. Because I don't think, you know, when you're talking about a specific deer, I don't really think I have a lot of stands to choose from. You know, I've got stands set up in specific areas for specific winds. And if you don't get, you know, that criteria, I'm not going to hunt that stand,
yep.
You know? And depending on, you know, what they're doing, the time of the year, and yeah, that's kind of a tough question, but it's, for me, like I said, I've got my spots set up and I know, you know, what I need for those spots. And if I don't get them, I'm not going in there.
Yeah.
Yeah. I probably scout more than I hunt, actually, because I think of all the big deer I've killed, most of them were shot the first time I go in. So I'm not really cycling through a bunch of my tree stands. I'm really, you know, waiting for the particular conditions I need for each spot. And if I don't get them, I'm not going in. But that doesn't mean I'm not hunting. I could be 200 yards away in an observation stand watching that area and try to pick up on, you know, something that deer might be doing, or maybe what the does are doing, mm-hmm. something I need to be able to avoid, you know. If I got groups of does coming out down one of a specific spot that I didn't know of, you know, just kind of picking up all the pieces of the puzzle and hunting from the outside in, trying to figure it out before you dive in.
Yeah. So last night I was walking into one of my, I've never killed a deer out of this tree, but I've had some amazing encounters. It's just, it's one of those stands where it's just like, I haven't killed a deer yet, but I don't know why I haven't killed a deer out of it yet. Right. It's just, there's a creek there and it sucks all the thermals down into it. And it's just almost like a Loctite type of scenario. Anyway, on my way to that stand, scrapes were open, tons of fresh scrapes. Do you feel that mature bucks in the rut are laying down a lot of sign?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
That would be my guess. I mean, because they're constantly moving.
Mm-hmm.
Constantly looking. I mean, that's what they do, you know. Yeah. They're scrapes. I'd love to know how many scrapes a mature buck lays down in a day when he's really on the move.
Yeah.
Yeah, whether they're opening new ones or working existing scrapes. But yeah, I mean, like you said, you've got all your cameras on scrapes right now. You know, we just kind of made that shift in the last 10 days from you know, food sources and rub lines and food plots to the scrapes. I mean, that's what it's all about right now.
Yep. Yep. Do you ever change a set or hang a new set up based off of new sign or fresh sign?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are you heavy scrape focused? Like you're trying to kill a buck in a scrape?
Yeah. Yeah, if you've got a mature buck working an area and he's got a particular, you know, favorite scrape that he hits, I think that's probably the best way to kill one right now.
Yeah.
Right. I mean, right now, this 10-day period.
Yeah. Okay. So what are some other things that you've observed over the course of your, 45 years that maybe a big old mature buck does or does not do?
Got some good ones.
I'm trying, dude. I'm looking at your wall right now and I have small man syndrome So I'm looking at them going, hey, why can't I kill a whole bunch of 200 inch deer or some big mature bucks? And you're able to get in close to them. Okay. Number one, they have to be there. But once you find them, you got to get close to them. And I've only been in shooting range of one 200 inch deer my entire life. And I buffed the shot on him, right? I hit him high and he survived. And the next year he was on the cover of North American Whitetail. Okay.
Wrong.
Yep. And so I chased this buck for a handful of years and I only had him, I observed him several times, but only got in shooting range of him once in that time frame, right? And because I'll give you a specific example of this buck. I had the wind in this scenario. At this point he was 180 inch, probably 8 year old. Right. I had him at a 4 year old. He was 170. 5 year old, he disappeared. 6 year old, he was back at about one, I don't know, right around the same 170. 8 year old, absolutely masked out. And this beautiful 180, maybe low 190s buck. The next year I hit him, is when he was 210 inches roughly. Okay. What I'm getting at is I watched a doe group come through. I watched small bucks come through 20 yards broadside and just, I had this path and I well thought out stand location. The wind was doing exactly what I wanted him to do. All these deer came out of this thickness. He came to the edge of the thickness and he just stopped. Right? Like, I know my wind was not going in that direction. All these other deer were very comfortable coming through and he just stopped. And then I watched him take a hard right, stay in the thickness, in this edge, walk out around and then loop around me and come back in, follow those deer up this drainage, up this draw. Like he had some kind of radar on his body that the other deer did not have. You know what I mean? And so I'm trying to understand why he did what he did. You know what I mean? And I can't figure it out. But him and other deer that I observed when they get that age do these types of things. And I there's no explanation for it.
Yeah. It's almost like a sixth sense.
Right.
You know, I talk to a lot of guys about it, and I'd say the same thing is that sometimes the toughest part of hunting a big deer is actually not hunting him until everything is right. And I'm probably way more conservative than the average guy when it comes to, you know, taking chances and rolling the dice on big deer. I mean, I really, like I said earlier, try to stack the deck in my favor and get as many things lined up as I can to increase my chances, you know. But I was going through some information the other night on all my big deer, trying to come up with, you know, a pattern. But I mean, they've all been killed all different phases of the year, all different months. You know, I've killed a couple big ones early September. I've killed a couple big ones, you know, January. My best time has been these last 10 days of October, you know, right when they're still doing the same thing every day and they're still pretty predictable and patternable, but they're not really cruising a bunch and chasing does yet. And I think it's just really all about knowing the animal and finding that one weak spot, you know, with that deer and where he's going to make a mistake, and whether it's early season, whether it's mid season, November, late season. Most of the big deer I've killed, I've hunted for 2 or 3 years before I ever killed them. I'm not going to sit here and say I'm a great hunter. I just think I'm probably more persistent and more patient than the next guy is.
Yeah. Yeah. And that is what I'm hearing. Let me ask you this question. Do you think guys try to get too close once they find out, let's say, oh dude, I got a booner on camera. Do you think guys go in too hard and too fast and try to get too close to them too soon?
Yeah. Yeah. I think one of the biggest things that helped me in my early days was some stuff I read that Miles Keller wrote about hunting from the outside in. Mm-hmm. And he'd find a big deer, and then before he ever just dove right in, you know, he'd stay back, you know, 200 or 300 yards and watch an area develop and try to get an eyeball on that buck and see what he was doing, and just gradually move closer and closer and closer until he knew the exact tree he needed to be in. Right. And that's kind of what I've done in the last, you know, 30 years, whether it's my summer scouting or even during season, is I'm kind of hanging back and watching, you know, through binoculars, through a spotting scope, through my trail cameras, an area developed until I can find that one little weak spot where I can get in on him. And yeah, I think most guys blow it before they ever really have, you know, their best opportunity. I mean, man, we put so much time and effort into finding a big deer, scouting him, you know, letting him go, habitat enhancement. I mean, all this stuff that you do. And then you go in too early, you know, and you blow it. Yeah. You know, why are you going to put all that effort into it before you go in, before you have your best chance of killing that deer? And I think that's probably the one thing that I would say has helped me the most, is just being patient and not diving in until I really knew what was going on and I really knew where I needed to be and when I really knew I had the best chance of killing that deer.
So do you believe then in a lot of observation type sits?
Yeah.
So you're playing off a lot, but just trying to get eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I feel like recently I haven't done enough of that, to be honest with you. I feel like I'm that guy who I've killed in these specific spots year before, years after year. So I'm going to go in and I'm going to hunt. But then again, I'm not necessarily hunting a specific buck. I'm hunting the top 5 deer on a farm, or 4 deer on a farm per se. And so I've done a lot of going into the best spots immediately and not waiting to see what the deer movement is, knowing that deer movement changes every single day on different farms. Right. So that's probably I would say that's probably one of my weaknesses. Right.
Well, I mean, right now you want to be aggressive and you want to be diving in, you know, in November, but early and late, that's not the time to do it.
Right, right. Is there something that as a hunter, as a bow hunter after mature bucks, do you find yourself making mistakes anymore?
I find myself still making mistakes. And then I think the reason that I've been successful is because I've kept an open mind and listened to everybody, you know, because once you think you know it all, you're going to get your ass handed to you. But listening to everybody, whether you believe it or not, you know, I try to pick up on one or two things from somebody that I can add to my system to make myself better, you know, and I don't close my mind off. Didn't close my mind off to the moon. I don't close my mind off to anything, because you just never know when you might pick up that one little thing from somebody that has been successful. It was wild. I met, you know who Bobby Worthington is?
He's from Tennessee or something, right?
School guy, killed some really big deer. I met him at a trade show a few years ago, and we were talking, and it was crazy how his tactics were like the polar opposite of what I did. But I mean, he found a system that works for him.
100%.
100%, you know, every year. And I found a little piece of what he did that helped me with my November hunting. You know, it was all about those rut funnels. You know, you find the best funnel in the area and you camp out in it in November, because the biggest buck in the area is eventually going to come through there.
Right.
And that really wasn't how I hunted November for a long time. But you got to keep an open mind and, you know, just keep adding those tools to the arsenal, because you just never know when you might need that one thing for a specific circumstance that's going to help you be successful.
That's a fact. That's a fact. And that's kind of like, to be honest, that's a little bit about how I've done it. I've taken what I feel has made me successful. And this is an approach to where I've kind of stuck with it, because I'm a business owner. I have 3 kids. I have a wife. I have you know, like to coach and all do all that stuff. So really what I'm trying to do, before I could go and hunt whenever I wanted, I tried to, the best time of the year, I've always felt that it's this November timeframe to try to get deer on their feet and put yourself in not necessarily the one deer's path, but a path that is going to have, give you the most opportunity at deer over a 5-day window. Basically, I'm taking 1 week off a year to go and hunt deer. I get a little more than that now, but that being able to look at a principle or a strategy and then try to apply it into your system is something that has really helped me over the years. Like, hey, why don't you try this? Or, well, I'll give it a try. I heard this guy say it. I'm going to give it a try. Ooh, I like that. Or, oh, I don't like it. And so like being able to adapt into different scenarios based off of experience and what other great people, like great hunters, say, I think is a good strategy in itself.
Perfect example was a deer I just killed in Illinois last week.
Yeah.
You know, so quick story on this deer. I know this deer was probably 7. I filmed him a couple times when he was a 145-inch 3-year-old, mm-hmm. had all kinds of potential. The next year at 4, he blew up. I mean, he grew 40 some inches, big 170-inch 8-point, big drop. I got a ton of video cam, trail camera pictures of him. I saw him the first week of season, too dark, too far, and then he vanished. And there was a big, heavy 10-point on that farm. And I'm positive that this 10 just beat the crap out of him because he mm-hmm. was gone the whole season. He showed up the next year, gimping around, his rack went way downhill. He had an eye gouge. He got the crap beat out of him. The 10-point ended up getting killed last year, and this buck showed back up, took over the farm. Smaller version of what he was this year. This year, he was in there. And I had, you know, I had that farm wired for sound with my reveal cameras. Only daylight pictures I got of this buck were right on the edge of a cornfield on his scrape line that was normally in there. 12th and 13th, they were both red moon nights. So he's only showed up on a red moon evening. The following red moon was last week. So I was planning on being out there. The only problem was every stand I had was wrong because we had east winds all last week, and east winds were blowing from the timber out into the corn where this buck was feeding. And there's probably 20 does on that farm. So I knew any of my 4 stands on that edge of this bluff, my scent's going to be blown out in the field. And the first mature doe that gets downwind of me, it's going to be game over. And I can't take a chance on this buck, you know, spooking, you know, I've got to kill him the first night. And I didn't know what to do. Wind was terrible. I knew he was going to show up in daylight. So I call a couple of my buddies that hunt ground blinds, banks blinds, elevated blinds. And I'm like, I've got a banks blind, you know, should I move it out into the field and brush it in with corn? And they're like, no, you've got to have an elevated blind so deer can see underneath it. Like, you want me to stick an elevated blind in the middle of the cornfield, and I'm just thinking to myself, the first deer that come out are going to look at it and spook, because I've never done that before. And I'm thinking, I got to have a blind in the field and cover it up. And they're like, don't even try it. Put an elevated blind in there. So we had an elevated blind on another farm. We moved it into the field. And the first night I'm sitting there, probably 15 or 16 does come out and a handful of mature does. They all come out in the field and they look right up at that blind and then just go to feed. And I'm like, you got to be kidding me.
That blows my mind that they can adapt to that so quickly.
It blew my mind. And the farmer even tried to talk me out of doing it because he didn't think it was going to work. He's like, man, roll the dice, climb into one of your stands. And I'm like, this is probably one of the most aggressive things I've ever done, but it's the safest thing mm-hmm. that I think I can do because I'm not going to allow any of those deer to wind me.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, you got to get past the does to kill the buck. And yeah, I never would have believed it. I never would have tried it on my own, but I got some guys, you know, everybody's got their brain trust, you know, that you mm-hmm. bounce ideas off of, and they're like, man, this is what you got to do. And I did it. And, you know, I owe all my thanks to those guys, because it's something I would have never done.
Yeah, that's crazy. I was always under that impression where you put a blind out, it takes like 2 months for him to get used to it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yep. Well, told me, they said, you can pull it in there. As long as they can see underneath it and through it, you'll be golden. Because how do they really know the difference between an elevated blind on a, you know, on a platform or a piece of farm equipment?
Yeah.
They're like, you stick a blind in on the ground, you brush it in, and you got your black hole, you know, that mm-hmm. you're going to shoot out of. As soon as they see that, it's going to be game over.
Interesting. Wow. And that's something that I don't do a lot, man. I'm a tree stand dude or a saddle guy. I don't hunt ground blinds hardly at all.
I don't either. You know, they have their place, you know, when mm-hmm. the weather's bad or when the wind's bad, and that's the only way you can get into a spot, you can't beat them.
Right.
But I mean, I don't like the fact that you get so many blind spots. You can't hear. It just doesn't feel like hunting to me.
Yeah.
I mean, if you've got a specific spot that you need to be in, no matter what the wind is doing, they're deadly.
Yeah, that's a fact. That's a fact. Well, Mr. Hayes, my friend, November, we're recording this on Halloween. November is tomorrow. And I'm looking forward to doing my dad duties, but then getting out in the tree stand for a handful of weeks now and trying to track something down and put an arrow through it. You got any other big deer on camera that you're looking to get in shooting range of this year?
I've got a handful of deer I've been watching here at home that it's like everything needs one more year.
Yeah.
You know, I've got one deer that has not shown up yet. So I'm kind of holding out for that deer, but I'll be hunting here at home. I've got a Texas hunt planned for early December, and then I'm kind of on standby for my spot in Alberta.
Yeah.
And my buddy up there has been running cameras, so we've been waiting for a specific deer to show up there. So hopefully that happens sooner than later, because late November gets brutal up there.
I believe it. But I talked with a guy who does hunt in Alberta. He was actually on the podcast several times. And, dude, Alberta is magical. That place is crazy good.
Yeah. Yeah. Biggest deer I've ever seen in my life I saw up there in Alberta.
Man.
It's not the place to go to see a lot, but that's the place to go to see the biggest deer you've ever seen in your life.
There you go. Enough said. Enough said. Well, Mr. Hayes, man, I appreciate your time. Thank you very much for, putting us into your schedule. You said you had something you wanted to share with us, some app that you wanted to share with us and give our listeners a discount.
Yeah. Yeah. If anybody's interested in trying out the Moon Guide app, I'm going to do a 40% introductory offer it'd be November 3rd through the 5th for 48 hours for your listeners. So they can save 40% off the Moon Guide app those 2 days.
Is there a discount code they need to enter?
No code. Don't need any code. You just go to Google Play or the App Store and download it for those 2 days, and the price is going to be reduced for everybody on those 2 days.
Perfect.
Make it easy.
Yep. Appreciate that. Thank you very much. And my friend, good luck the rest of the season.
You too, man. Have to catch up here and see how November goes for you.
Absolutely.
We're leaving today and entering a world of Mickey Mouse waving, princess meeting and greeting, lightsaber clashing, the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror dropping, Banshee flying, Space Mountain launching, galaxy rewinding, what is the point of galaxy rewinding, fireworks igniting, world of other worlds. For whatever you love, infinite worlds await at the most magical place on Earth, Walt Disney World Resort.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
How many discounts does USAA auto insurance offer? Too many to say here. Multi-vehicle discount, safe driver discount, new vehicle discount, storage discount, legacy.
How many discounts will you stack up? Tap the banner or visit usaa.com/autodiscounts. Restrictions apply.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence, helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
President's Day savings are happening now at the Home Depot with up to 40% off select appliances. Looking to upgrade your fridge? Check out LG's newest model, serving up ice in all kinds of styles. Cube, crushed, craft ice, and now new mini craft ice straight from the dispenser. From cold brew to fizzy favorites, these refrigerators will have you entertaining like a pro. Shop President's Day savings and get up to 40% off, plus free delivery on select appliances like LG at the Home Depot. Free delivery on appliance purchases of $1,498 or more. Offer valid February 5th through the 25th, U.S. only. See store online for details.
Starting a business can seem like a daunting task, unless you have a partner like Shopify. They have the tools you need to start and grow your business. From designing a website to marketing to selling and beyond, Shopify can help with everything you need. There's a reason millions of companies like Mattel, Heinz, and Allbirds continue to trust and use them. With Shopify on your side, turn your big business idea into... Sign up for your $1 per month trial at shopify.com/special offer.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries. Outrageously dependable.